From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Sandy Simon from the Rockefeller University is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about a novel polarized microscopy technique for proteomics research. Dr. Sandy Simon is professor in the Laboratory of Cellular Biophysics at the Rockefeller University in New York. Using biophysical tools with a heavy emphasis on imaging, his lab studies individual events as a way of gaining insight into biological systems. Dr. Simon, you and your colleagues have reported the development of a technique that relies on polarized light to help show the orientation of specific proteins within a cell. Would you provide some specifics on your polarized light technique and tell us about the significance of your study?
Over the past years, we, meaning the scientific community, have been developing many different techniques that allow us to look both at the structure of proteins as well as the dynamics of proteins as they move and interact with other proteins. The greatest advances have come from looking at the static structure of proteins. We're still sort of stymied in our attempts to understand both the orientation of proteins when proteins are assembled into larger macromolecular complexes, but also the dynamics of proteins, how they move around as they carry on their business or as they interact with other proteins. What we were hoping to do was ask, can we take advantage of using visible light to actually explore both the orientation of proteins, how they're put together, but also their dynamics as they function. And the basic idea is actually a very simple one. It's actually based on a technique that many other people have used in the past to look at other questions, and that is the following. If you have a fluorophore, meaning a molecule which you can excite and then have it emit fluorescence, it turns out there's an optimal angle for exciting the fluorophore, an angle of light, a particular polarization of light. And when you excite the molecule, it also then has an optimal angle for emitting or optimal polarization for emitting that light. And we realize that if a protein was held at a particular angle, we can actually figure out what that angle orientation is by exciting it with a particular angle of polarized light. So by just varying the angle at which we excite the molecule, we can actually see what is the orientation of that molecule. Now, in the process of doing this, we get as a bonus another very important bit of information. If the molecule is very static in position, then when you excite it, it will end up emitting at pretty much the same angle at which you excited it. If the molecule's moving a little bit, then it will have a chance to move a bit between when you excite it and when it emits. So then the angle at which it emits will be altered a bit from what you excited. If it's moving even faster, so let's say it's a much more dynamic molecule, it will start changing the orientation of the polarization even more so. So by just looking at the angle with which you can excite a molecule and then looking at the angle of the polarization with which it emits, you can get two very important bits of information. You can get information on what is the orientation of that molecule, but then also the dynamics of the molecule. Now, by putting your probe in different places along a molecule, you can then even map out which parts of the molecule are more dynamic or less dynamic.
In your paper, there's a lot of discussion about the nuclear pore complex. What is the nuclear pore complex, and why was it the focus of your research project?
So we focused on the nuclear pore for two reasons. First of all, was sort of a very broad interest in the nuclear pore itself. This is the main gateway between the nucleus, which is where the genome is, and the cytosol. So whenever a cell makes a new messenger RNA transcript that has to go out into the cytosol to then be transcribed into a protein, it has to travel through the nuclear pore. Whenever there are signals to a cell to make more of a protein, those signals in the form of various transcription factors have to enter the nucleus through the nuclear pore. So this gateway is sort of a very important point at sort of regulating expression of the genome in a cell. And it is reasons to believe that actually regulation of this transport can have important consequences for a cell. Over the past 15, 20 years, due to the work of many different groups, we've learned a lot about what proteins make up this complex. We've learned a lot about what factors help regulate transport, but we have very little sense about how the transport occurs. And part part of the reason being is that thanks to some beautiful structural work, we can now do X-ray crystallography and study single individual proteins, at least the static parts of this protein, and look at their shape. Or we can look at a much larger scale level and a much coarser level in a way and look at the overall shape of the nuclear pore with electron microscopy. The problem is there's a gap between the two. We either have an angstrom level resolution from the X-ray crystallography, or we have a sort of tens of nanometer resolution from the EM. We don't know how to bridge between the two, and that's sort of the scale at which the nuclear pore works. That's the scale at which the different molecules interact, either to let things in or out. And thus, that's the scale we wanted to be able to look at. The other reason for doing it is that we actually think that this is an important technique, or could be a very powerful technique, for looking at a variety of different macromolecular motors and assemblies. And we chose the nuclear pore as a first model system, in part because a lot is already known about the components that make it up. And it has the advantage of being very symmetrical, so we thought it would be easier to resolve questions of structure. However, if we can work out the technique for something like the nuclear pore, then it could be potentially applicable to more complicated situations. For example, how does the ribosome work, which is involved in synthesizing proteins, or some of the machinery involved in making DNA or RNA? Or actually, now we're trying to apply the same problem to questions of viral assembly.
Right now, your work appears to be focused in the basic research phase. What are the potential applied and medical applications of your work? In other words, how might this approach lead to findings that can eventually be used in the clinic?
For the moment, we're focusing on this particular project, the nuclear pore, on developing the technique and asking a very basic cell biological question. How does the nuclear pore function to regulate either transport in or transport out? So we don't have an immediate clinical goal on it. However, sort of shortly down the line, there are a number of potential clinical applications. So one very specifically with the nuclear pore is that for some strange reason, in a number of different cancers, there are various chromosomes that have translocations, which means rearrangements that result in alterations in the synthesis of various proteins in the nuclear pore. We have no idea of how this impacts the nuclear pore, nor how this ends up impacting the cancer state. So if we could have a good assay for how is the pore structured, how does the pore function, we can then begin to start looking at some of the pores in some of these tumor cell lines. The most immediate application that we're doing is actually applying the same technique to a totally different problem. Over the past 3-4 years, we've been very actively involved in studying the assembly of viruses, in particular, studying the assembly of HIV in the cell. And we've developed the technology that allows us to study single viruses as they assemble and actually look at the individual proteins and individual molecules, both those encoded by the virus, including the genome, as well as the molecules that are part of the host, the cell that's been infected, and ask how do they interact with each other. And during viral assembly, what you end up getting is this beautiful machine coming together of different parts to make a very, very highly structured molecule. And on preliminary studies, we found we can use the same approach of using polarization to look at both the dynamics of the viral molecules as they come together, but also their orientation as they get assembled together into a fully functional virus.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com. And give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse, saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.